sequence have been achieved. I'll also test my levels.
Yeah, that for that, all the it, for all the times in the
sexy.
Podcast where
Did it
we
sound
go,
sexy to you?
We go, Max, surprise. He goes, ah.
For all those times, that's for every time that I see Tim Curry, and, and I'm like, he's gonna get me.
Yeah.
He's that clown I hate.
Yeah. He's that clown. No. He's
well,
literally
this,
the,
this,
the
he's
devil.
Sort of a clown from the standpoint that he's a Soviet doctor yeah. in this movie.
He's a man no one respects.
I was about to say that. Yeah, he's just a clown in that he has arguably. He's a man that the rest of society respects, but that the military thinks is a fucking idiot. Anywhere else on the planet, and people would be like, "You're right, Doctor." And he's the one place where everyone's like, "Shut up."
Yeah. Also, the doctor,
shut the fuck up.
The doctor is the only guy on the submarine who's like, "If you say he slipped on tea, I guess that's what happened." Everyone else, like, "Are you shitting
that
me?"
Poor guy. Yeah,
There's like, we put the word Soviet before doctor. So
there's also like he might have defected with them for sure. And they just asked him, but nobody wanted to ask him. It's so sad.
Actually an excellent point.
I'm keeping all this in the episode. Like, welcome to Gentlemen Prefer Bonds. I'm Will Daniel.
Yeah, it seems like he kind of wanted to be a part of that
crew.
No,
I already screwed up. He's Will Schlick. I'm Max Wilcox, and
you don't get to say your
doctor,
name.
He's legitimately sad when the ship sinks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when the sub gets quote unquote hit. Like I feel like it was Tim Curry being like, "Those are my only friends." No, like he totally would have gone to Montana.
Wow, that was a good impression of the baby that Tim Curry had with Alan Rickman.
Now that is an American ass baby. That would. No, God, please, God, no.
So tonight, if you haven't gotten it from all that, we're continuing our series of films that feel Bond-inspired or adjacent in some way, and talking about the 1990 blockbuster The Hunt for Red October, directed by John McTiernan, written by Donald E. Stewart and Larry Ferguson, who also plays the chief of the boat that's teasing the guy for liking Pavarotti in one of the first scenes. It's adapted, of course, from the novel by Tom Clancy. I don't think I've ever read a Tom Clancy book. I'm guessing that you haven't, and Max has.
I have.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Well, really? that's fun. So, Max is.
I would have put.
You've read.
Honestly, though, even knowing that I haven't, I would have put money on you being right that I have.
I mean,
I think that your assertion.
The
correct,
guy that's read every Dan Brown book.
Yeah,
hasn't read a Tom Clancy.
I was an avid reader as a child in grade school.
There are only like 5 Dan Brown books. Do you know? Are you okay? Do you read books? There's not that many.
I probably assumed he wrote one every year.
You could have gone Dean Koontz. You could have gone Dean Koontz. He's written a shitload of books. Or John Grisham. They've both written like 30 books each, and I've read probably 15 or 20 of each of their books.
Oh, I'm sorry about my comments about Dan Brown. I rescind them.
Yeah.
Of only respect for the writer of the Da Vinci Code and
Inferno. Ron Howard's personal friend.
Yeah, like J.D. Vance.
Danathan Brown.
I don't want to be critical of you, but like shame on you, actually.
for assuming.
For having read a Dan Brown book?
No, shame on Will for
assuming people from Kentucky don't fuck around with book learning.
No, shame on you for not liking Dan Brown or thinking that Dan Brown is lesser than he is. I mean,
Now let's hold on. I'm not defending Dan Brown. I'm simply saying
very
he's
prolific.
Not written sort of his oeuvre is, if I'm not mistaken, like 4 of those books, 4 of the like Robert Langdon books, maybe 5. And then I think, like, maybe 3 others. He wrote one called Digital Fortress about the NSA that is actually quite fun.
Yeah.
But, like, they're just airport books. There's nothing wrong. I put them in the same places, like a Tom Clancy or, like, a who's the guy that writes ship books?
Oh, that wrote, like, Master and Commander? That guy?
No, because those are supposed to be great.
Yeah, those are actually amazing. Pretty good, yeah.
You're not thinking Clive Cussler, are you?
I think you are thinking
Clive Cussler.
He likes his boats. I've read a couple of those Dirk Diggler novels. They're fun.
Yeah. Dirk Diggler, he's not supposed the to, protagonist. Yeah,
not
the
not Dirk, not Dirk Pitt. Dirk Diggler from Boogie Nights.
It's 2022. You're not supposed to use that terminology anymore. You're not allowed to call them Dirk Digglers anymore. people get upset.
So yeah, The Hunt for Red October. Did you guys watch this movie when you were kids?
Yeah, this was a big TNT movie when I was a kid. Saw it then. Strange enough, I probably watched it, I think it was like 2 years ago, maybe actually during the pandemic. So maybe, yeah, I thought it was maybe before or during the pandemic. Watched it recently. Really, really loved it watching it then, and loved it again now.
Yeah, this is the definition of a movie that I saw once, and then you just consistently see like 5 minute parts of it on TV.
Yeah.
But like the time I saw it was honestly so long ago that watching it again, felt like a first time, which was fun because it is a good movie, which is we don't get to say every time we do this podcast, and so it is like it's fun to sit down and be like, oh shit, like I'm actually going to enjoy this. Like this has a decent script. This is well shot. This is gonna have legitimate action. The score is fine. That's me.
Yeah, that was a little point. Disappointing. Yeah.
I would say the thing about this movie is it's not really an action movie.
Yeah, really.
It doesn't have much action in it, and it's. If you take out the submarine scenes underwater, you could almost make this movie as a stage play, which is crazy. Like it's a couple of different sets, and like
that's a really good point.
It's. I really really like how. Much this is a set piece movie. Like you have your Red October set, you have the USS Dallas, you have sort of the wherever Jack Ryan is, those sets, and then you have the Stellan Skarsgård, whatever that boat, that submarine's called. Like it's essentially four or five sets, and it works really, really well. The tension is super high for like a pretty contained drama aboard.
A lot of the drama is just Jack Ryan's fear of turbulence. And the fact that over the course of like 2 days, he has to take several forms of transportation that are all very turbulent.
Also, he deals with a flight attendant who apparently has never heard the word turbulence.
Who is also British on a flight from...
Oh, no. Like, he lives in London.
Does he live in the UK?
Yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't know.
I only read Dan Brown now.
I watched the beginning of this again with McTiernan's commentary today, and he talks about how he Tom Clancy was a little pissed at him because he gives, even though she's only in like one scene of the movie, he gives Jack Ryan a British wife, which I guess his wife is American in the books, and yeah. Tom Clancy wanted his family to be all American, but he just has a British woman walk in and out to like further establish that like we're in England, by the way. And then
here's the thing. If she is British, then that sets up, because I am the weirdo that then went in and was reading a whole bunch of like what Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan book stuff, like book things. He becomes the fucking president for two terms. He's an 8-year president, and you can't tell me that he would have been elected with a British wife. I kind of have to think.
So
that
he was
Tom Clancy is like she's an American as apple pie because he gets elected president.
Well, I don't think he gets elected president. I think he gets. He's the vice president, and then the president dies.
That does happen, which doesn't make it better that he became vice president. But again, you missed the part where I said he's a two term. That motherfucker gets reelected.
Oh, okay,
but yeah, also
I didn't miss that.
Yeah, also he's pulling into just LAX where they just put a Heathrow sign up. But yeah, also that like. Old school, like super 90s looking plane, and that flight attendant and her, just the whole look of that scene where she comes and asks him if he wants anything and he says no. I like really was hoping she'd be like the cinema of the Ukraine, perhaps. And
he also is so mean to her. What a rude, when he's like,
I'm gonna scientifically explain turbulence.
She goes, excuse me, and he's like, when the heat from the earth and the mat, like, doing all this stuff, and I'm like, hey guy, I just want to give you a fucking ginger ale and like continue our flight.
Yeah, maybe a little mini bag of pretzels.
Okay,
yeah, your stomach.
So I'll open with this question then, or not open, but I'll pose this question: is this movie better with Harrison Ford as Jack Ryan?
Oh no,
no.
No, not this one. Not this one.
Is he too cool?
I'd make the opposite argument. Are the other movies that Harrison Ford's in
with the other
Patriot? Yeah, are those better with Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan?
Yep.
I'd argue yes.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you.
I feel like my argument for Harrison Ford. I think Harrison Ford's a better actor at talking to himself. Like, I think he would do a better job at Jack Ryan being like, taking a shower and like get shaving and be like, I know how the Russians are gonna get off the submarine. Like, when there's no one else in the room, I feel like Harrison Ford does those scenes better.
Harrison Ford is just, I don't, as much as this is gonna sound insane, because his second best love character of all time is a professor, he doesn't read like a like a book learner. Like, he doesn't read like the appropriate term in military or armed forces would be like a desk jockey, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole point and purpose is supposed to be that the reason why people don't immediately agree with Jack Ryan is that he's just a desk jockey. He's just a guy. So like, why, they're all of them are saying to themselves, why do I have to trust this guy? It's like, it's Moneyball. It's Jonah Hill and Moneyball.
I'd point out the biggest thing is he's young. He's supposed to be young.
Yeah.
And like, right. Harrison Ford is not young at this point in this movie. Like, he's probably in his mid or late 40s, early 50s here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 90? 50 when Patriot Games comes out.
Yeah.
I do like Patriot Games 48. And Clear and Present Danger. Clear and Present Danger is the definitely the better.
Yeah, that's the better of those. But like, Jack Ryan's supposed to be kind of a young, like, you know, upstart CIA analyst or whatever. He's not supposed to be like this. Harrison Ford is way too old to play this role. I would never believe like he's this guy working against the system to prove a theory that no one else believes in. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, so this movie's PG, which is kind of crazy that, like, you know, we start PG-13 like 85, 86, but there's still a bunch of movies that seem to just kind of slip through the cracks. Like, Living Daylights
gets a PG.
Yeah, Living Daylights gets a PG. This gets a PG, and like, it's, there's hardly any blood in this movie, but like, when Ramius kills the KGB guy in one of the early scenes, that's a violent kill. Like, you kind of feel that death.
This is what would fall under, it's the term I always laugh about, but this is what would fall under now, like thematic elements or whatever that stupid, like,
which is sort just, of like a wink wink, like, your kids are gonna be bored.
Like, yeah, well, not only that, but it's like, this is also 90. Like, it's not as if the Cold War, like, this is some quote unquote real shit. If you're like an 8-year-old seeing this and you're just gonna be like, hey mom, do the Russians have a caterpillar engine? But like, could the world end tomorrow? But like that's, I'm shocked. I am actually shocked that got away with the PG.
It is still weird to me how the casting goes between these movies, because I think Harrison Ford is up for this, and he's in the late 80s for some reason kind of starting to lose a little steam and starting to lose roles, and he loses this obviously to Alec Baldwin, and then apparently they just negotiate behind Baldwin's back and get Ford in for Patriot Games. And I don't really know what the deciding factor would be there, because, like, I mean, Last Crusade maybe comes out while they're making this movie, and that's, like, a huge hit. But, like, this movie does really well, and Harrison Ford doesn't really have another big hit until after Patriot Games. Like, The Fugitive comes out after that.
Jesus, I love The Fugitive.
Yeah, Harrison Ford has a great 90s. Really. So does Connery.
So good. That movie's so freaking good. Do you want to talk about the hilarity of just Jack Ryan in general? Is that they go, they then the next time you see him after Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger is 2002 in Sum of All Fears, when he's played by Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, even though it's 2002 Ben Affleck, which is like prime sort of we're trying to make this guy an action star Ben Affleck, like that's shocking and hilarious. And then you because this character's around forever, right? Like Tom Clancy's dead and Jack Ryan books come out.
Right.
Still. The next time you see him is that Chris Pine plays him in 2014, and now the third season of the Amazon show comes out in December.
Yeah.
Starring Krasinski. Like Jack Ryan is unkillable, and it is hilarious to see the sort of modern thought process about him, because this is just like what movies are now. Like I'm pretty sure that in the show he still starts quote unquote as like a desk guy, but then like the whole rest of the show is just like him being a spy soldiery guy. But like in this movie they really leaned into his origins as just like,
yeah,
hey, I wonder if this guy wears a knit turtleneck, and you're like, he does. Of his own choice.
Yeah, no, the half of the opening credits scene is just like, we're going to flash around like and show all his like books and maps and like doctorates and shit. Like, try to tell you how smart he is.
Yeah, he's an egghead, you know?
Yeah. He should try reading books instead of burning them.
I think Krasinski's a great casting choice for like this version of Ryan, who, you know, is a brilliant desk guy who maybe occasionally has to punch someone. It definitely, I haven't seen that show, it definitely looks like they're just turning it into like 24, but
I do want to watch it. I heard it's good.
It looks fun. Yeah. I like how there's a guy, he just says to Ryan at one point, I'm a politician, which means I'm a cheat and a liar, and when I'm not kissing babies, I'm stealing their lollipops.
I'm stealing their lollipops. So good. That dude got to relish in that. Also, that like, there's that, yeah, it's like right after that big meeting, there's a big meeting of all of the quote-unquote, like, Navy guys, and they're like, the minute that a random person says, we think this thing might exist, it's just a room full of, like, 15 dudes going, hubbub, 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 rhubarb, 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 with Jack Ryan just screaming out, like, ah, damn it, or, like, some random nonsense to shut them up.
I think he goes, son of a bitch, like, twice. Right. Like, yeah,
just. No? They're like, uh-huh, yeah. We're all aware that you have strong main character energy. We'll all shut up for you.
I love that, too. Like, that guy steals a couple of scenes coming after that. Like, the scenes with the ambassador, where he just continues to be, like, a really crappy politician and leans into it. Like, as an actor, those scenes are so great when you can tell he's, like, sort of poking the Russian ambassador and, like, playing this, like, verbal jabbing with him. That guy does a really good job in this movie.
All those side scenes are all stuff that also, like, it wouldn't... I was thinking about it today, right? And I was like, movies that come out now are so individual-driven, right? The concept of the sort of the multi-handedness that this movie takes is, I think, really lost. Because I wouldn't even call this, like, what you would start to call these ones now is, a big cast of really great actors. Oh, they're going to win a SAG award for best cast. And, like, it's a bunch of, like, A and B listers who maybe are, like, all Oscar maybe wannabes. This is just a movie where, like, yes, there are a whole bunch of people, because this is in the past, who became big. This is a movie where there's a whole bunch of people who are just quote-unquote faces who get legit screen time and are great and further the plot. Every one of those scenes between the two ambassadors is fucking great, and it would never, ever happen if you made that movie today. It would be cut for a bullshit five-minute fight scene on a submarine.
Joss Ackland is the Russian diplomat guy who's the bad guy in Lethal Weapon 2.
He's also in Mighty Ducks.
Does he play an evil South African in Mighty Ducks?
No, he's the Swedish. He's the guy that isn't he the guy that owns the skate shop in Mighty Ducks? He's the guy that Coach Bombay, like he's his mentor character. Did you two not grow up on Mighty Ducks?
I saw probably all of the Mighty Ducks movies, but around the time they came out.
I loved
a,
you weren't like
a kid.
It wasn't like a Blockbuster thing. You didn't like rent Mighty Ducks.
I'm sure
no,
I
rented the first Mighty Ducks and the second more than once.
I've
been watching since I was 9.
Oh, they're really good.
Look, I'm a Gordon Bombay head. Okay, I love his energy. I love the fact that he's coaching a team because he has a DUI. We don't get movies like that anymore.
They create the Flying V. He gets to even. He's a lawyer and he shows up in I think the back of a limousine, which is bonkers even for a lawyer. What lawyer does that? None.
No.
That movie's great. I wish a lot of these Russians had a little bit more of that, you know, that energy.
Yeah, I mostly appreciate the Mighty Ducks nowadays as being, I think, the primary inspiration for The Way Back starring Ben Affleck. So also about
back
a drunk
Affleck.
Who has to is forced to
yes.
teach the kids a sport.
Yeah, that is sort of sad, Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
But no, to my previous point, this cast is just bonkers because it was just a bunch of people who are good at the craft who are being given the gift of having importance.
Yeah, well, and it's guys who a number of guys who in 1990 were still very much trying to be leading men like Sam Neill and Scott Glenn, just happily taking great supporting roles and doing really well with them. Great device, having the zoom in and out to like we're doing English now. Like
is that I couldn't remember because I haven't watched it in forever. But is that the same way that they do Valkyrie?
It's very similar. It's definitely ripping this off where it's, I think they like
it was like a book or like they zoom into something.
Yeah, it's zooming in on he's like. Yeah, it's like he's writing in like a journal, and then it fades from German to English. Yeah. So it's basically the same thing.
Can we just, for the moments in which he is quite good, Mr. Connery, can we all agree that when he is saying words that are Russian, he has no fucking clue what he's saying?
Learn those phonetically, oh, right? Like,
yeah.
He does not
no.
know Russian.
He could definitely just be saying Scooby Dooby, Scooby Doo. Like, he is saying nothing.
Yeah, you're never hiring Connery to not play a Scotsman, really, or not have his voice.
But also, he did not put in the bare minimum. But,
yeah, you're
effort.
Right. He sounds yeah, silly.
there's no way.
Moments,
there's
yeah.
there one of the actors that they're with is Russian. It's the guy that is also he's also in the Italian Job. He's the guy that's like that's worried of all of the naval officers. That dude's straight up from the former USSR. Like he could have just asked him while they were filming.
Their whole crew, like all the extras and everyone, like are on the Russian ship are actual Russian guys. Mitternin wanted them to just have like, I guess that look and some, you know, whatever customs and et cetera could translate on screen, and then had the U.S. There's a lot of U.S. soldier Navy men in the American ships in the movie, and got sort of trained by those guys and how to be sailors. What were you gonna say, Max?
I was gonna say that I love that. So they transfer over right to English, and like I can imagine them like talking and stuff. And be like, it's great. We're gonna transfer to English, and Sean Connery's like, "Yeah," and I'll have my accent, right? And then Sam Neill turns and he's like, "And then I'm gonna be allowed to have my New Zealand accent, right?" And they go, "Oh no! it's 1990. The people are not ready for your accent. We're gonna ask you to play an American accent, but since you're talking, since you're pretending to be Russian, but you're also talking to Sean Connery." we all are aware that Sam Neill's accent just shifts in every scene, right? Sam Neill sounds like a different human being.
I thought he was
in every
going
scene.
For like British or something.
I'm not really sure what Sam Neill's going for in the movie. And
Sam Neill's good in it,
makes him a
but
little bit more
creepy crazy.
Than he should be.
Yeah. I feel so bad. But that man has a beautiful accent. They should just let him sound like himself.
Yeah, so he's like, so I'll go with my regular voice. And they're like, were you James Bond? Did you just win an Oscar for Untouchables?
Did you get to be James Bond? And then Tim Curry was like, can I be myself? And they're like, you be a little bit of yourself. Tim, you're allowed to be amounts of yourself. This the cast is bonkers, by the way. The fact that they go like, oh yeah, and there's this other Russian submarine captain, and he's great. It's just Stellan Skarsgård showing up.
It's awesome.
If I knew that Stellan Skarsgård was hunting me, I would give up.
Yeah, we have to talk about sweaty cigarette smoking Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh, so good
in this movie, which there's very few of them. He is so sweaty, and he's smoking cigarettes the whole time, and it is funny to see him doing that.
This and I bet he shot the whole thing
like,
in like
American
a day.
Movies, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's no doubt he shot that in less than 24 hours.
So
and
good.
He's just like, he looks so. I don't know what the makeup department was like. Yeah, just squirt this guy down with a water bottle, like as much as we can. Like this like, guy's got to be the most sweaty submarine captain we've ever seen.
Make him
seen.
Wetter.
like, so we're gonna hit all these guys because the sub's really hot. No, only him. Only he's really
yeah,
hot.
Only he's.
Look at him. Look at that man.
Off. And this, like, how upset he is the whole time, just chasing down his mentor. Like, it's so funny.
He does a great job.
He slaps in the movie, but
Alec Baldwin is really wet only at the very end when he has the gun and he's hunting down the cook. made him soaking wet in that moment.
He gets absurdly wet. He has a full stream of water just like
it's dripping,
dropping
he's dripping.
Down from his chin. Yeah. Oh no, he's not dripping. He has a full faucet running out of there. And
like it's a tube they ran up
I
the
have
back
to
of
ask,
his head.
Yeah, is someone who doesn't know much about submarines, is it that hot on submarines that everyone's that sweaty all the time? Because in an unventilated space that you could never walk out of and have no windows or nothing to bring in a breeze or anything, God, that's got to be horrible.
Even if it's not that hot, I mean, there's no way a submarine that's been under for months smells anywhere near good.
I love that they're on a submarine and Sean Connery burns the paper at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I was like, the whole submarine's going to smell like burned paper now from one end of it to the next. And he does not care to that amount. As we said, to that amount where like he kills the informations officer who is supposed to open their mission statement with him. And God kills him in the most violent, horrifying way. And then burns the piece of paper in a room that is roughly 4 foot by 4 foot. And then is immediately like, hey, everyone come in here.
Yeah, that's also suspicious. They come in, the dead guy. What was that? Were there fire? What else happened?
Why'd you say that? Why is there burnt paper on your table? And he's like, shut up. You're a doctor. Shut up.
Would you like to guess the year that the United States government made it illegal to smoke on a United States submarine?
Ooh.
1991.
No.
They had to have seen this movie and just been like,
hold up.
Oh my God.
This feels like some shit that got cleaned up post 9/11. This feels like some shit that like no one ever mentioned it or thought about it. And so it's going to be something that like when even more money started to go into the military industrial complex. Oh, and there's the whole bit on the West Wing. I hate that I'm breaking this down. There's a whole bit on the West Wing about, an ashtray that when you break it doesn't shatter into a million parts. I love the West Wing. And I think that episode came out in probably 2000. So I'm going to say 2004.
2010. until 12 years ago, you could just smoke on a U.S. submarine.
I claim that as a victory. I claim that as a victory for myself.
I didn't look it up for Russia, but if they were still smoking on submarines, yeah. I'd believe it.
Look, the math checks out. Max, you did a great job.
If Aaron Sorkin's talking about it, someone's going to listen. That's what I know.
I got what's his name? Thomas Arana as the bad guy. He's also the bad guy in The Bodyguard, and he's one of his like second in command guys at the beginning of Gladiator, who kind of betrays him and then kind of comes around at the end, but is still shitty.
What do you mean by bad guy?
He's
in which one?
He's the saboteur
the Ryan shoots at
like
the end.
He has one line. That part I will say is a little like
that's the closest you get to a villain.
Yeah, I was supposed to say it has Agatha Christie turning in her fucking grave. Like there's one character it could be. It's the one crew member that had a line of fucking dialogue.
Well, you don't think they're pointing to the guy who's in the like orange jumpsuit?
No, because he brought the first suspicious thing to the captain.
Yeah,
he would have just not brought that to the defectors. Captain. Yeah, he's in on the defection. Yeah,
yeah, he's in the room when they meet, and he's like, "Oh, you know, I'll go look at who." Like, I forget, was the caterpillar drive already destroyed at that point or something? But like this, there's no doubt the people in the room are all pretty loyal. Like they try to do this misdirect where all the people, they want you to think all the people that are defecting are not loyal, but they end up being loyal.
Sean Connery has a line of dialogue that fucks that over, because he has a line of dialogue where he says every one of the officers had access to the submarine beforehand and would have done something before, so it can't be them. Like he point blank expels our disbelief. So he's like, it has to be a crew member, and then has the line to the doctor, which is, by the way, this is not the doctor's job. When they get everyone off the ship, he turns to the doctor and he's like, make sure everyone gets off the ship. And I'm like, that is so not this man's purview. There are definitely like sort of commanders underneath you who do that sort of thing. Are you sure that you're a captain? But like, yeah, that is the
I'm
one
gonna
part
go
of this
with
movie
the
that's
doctor
a little...
who I don't trust and won't give a nuclear key to.
That's the one part that's a little like meh to me about the movie. It's just like, could there have been one other like soldier that had a line or two that like you can at least maybe be a little like suspicious of? Maybe it's better in the book. I would imagine it has to be. But like you're watching it the whole time and you're saying to yourself, like, it's going to be the cook, right? It's probably going to be the cook.
Yeah. Also, he's got that face.
He does. He sure does. But yeah, this movie has everyone in it. I like James Earl Jones just showed up and I was like, hey man.
Oh yeah.
I was like, you are, and he's like, I'm doing very well. Thank you. Like everyone's in this movie.
Yeah, I forgot he shows up on the submarine at the end. And like he like self-destructs the torpedo that gets shot, and that he's there for like 5 seconds and is like, that the torpedo malfunctioned on its own. I was never here.
Yeah, and then Fred Thompson is like the leader of like the big aircraft carrier.
Senator Fred Thompson.
Yeah. Yes. Like this cast is insane. That to me is the thing that like really makes this movie, is that you believe everything is so believable because from the top down, it like there's no mistakes in casting. It's just wall to wall, just legit actors. Which is amazing.
Well, you know, Sam Neill hits it out of the park. Sean Connery, obviously, on the boat. Like, on the USS Dallas, Scott Glenn, Courtney B. Vance headed out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
It's... Every place you go in this movie, like, every set piece it hits, like, there's a bunch of really, really good actors in it. And they... This is like thought of as an action movie. It's not an action movie at all. It's really it's just kind of a drama.
No, yeah. it's like a suspense.
With
this movie's there are the moments that are the most quote unquote actiony are moments where you are watching a room full of people be afraid they're going to die violently and quickly.
And it's sort of it's made by the actors that are just like chewing up these scenes. They do a really good job.
Yeah, dude, the whole scene where they are the ship is cruising through all the sort of the underwater canyon near Iceland is so good. It's like a 10-minute, 15-minute scene of just guys that are horrified and nervous and you start the whole scene with the guy walks over and he's like, "Do you think you got this?" And he turns and he goes, if I had a map and a stopwatch, I could fly a plane through the Alps with no windows." And I was like, "Shit, hell yeah!" And then after that, it's just like one thing goes wrong, the next thing goes wrong, and Sean Connery's telling you to go 26 knots, and then he fucking turns to Sam Neill, he puts on his seatbelt. That entire scene is so good, and there's no running, there's no like quote unquote action, but like that is more action packed than so many other bad quote unquote action movies.
Yeah, and there's for the visuals. I mean, there's McTiernan talked about how much of a challenge that was to like how do we present something that you completely would not be able to see in real life. It's so dark at the depths these subs are at most times, and I think they do a great job with there's models, there's, you know, obviously not great CGI, but most of it is just dark enough that it's fine.
Like, it follows the Jurassic Park rule, right?
Yeah,
where it's like make it
dark and wet.
Yeah, make it dark and make it underwater so your brain doesn't have to super think about it. Your brain doesn't have to think about how real the torpedo looks or not, because there's so much like background noise for your eyes.
Yeah. And that one of the first shots that starts with Connery and then goes back with the sub, that was like a fake like model sub that they built that I guess was just like a boat with like a submarine top that was floating there, and then you know real ships are tugboats that are following them there.
Have y'all ever been on a submarine?
Stuff. No,
I'm not in the military.
No, it's fun. No, there are a couple of decommissioned ones you can go to in San Francisco. There's one, I think there's one in Boston. I would highly suggest it. It is very cool. It is a marvel of sort of like human creation, like the fact that we created a ship that can live underwater for months at a time, is badass, especially since it's something that we did almost 100 years ago, which is insane. Yeah. I would highly suggest it. As I was watching this, I was like, damn, I want another submarine movie. I think that could be so cool with so much of the technology and stuff that we have now. That would be fucking sick.
Yeah, we've really gone away from the submarine movie in the last decade or so. I think we had K-19, the Widowmaker, and then...
You want to know why? Because not many terrorist cells have navies. That's the exact reason why Hollywood turned away from it, because most terrorist cells are a little landlocked and they need bad guys.
Yeah, can the terrorists just start making submarines? Come on, guys.
Please, can someone get Al Qaeda one submarine so that I can see a good submarine movie again?
Wait, but K-19 the Widowmaker was not a submarine movie. I'm confusing it with U-57.
No, they both are.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they both lost money.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Shout out to Crimson Tide, because it's awesome.
Yeah, Crimson Tide rocks.
That's, you know, a few years after this one. Yeah, I think this isn't quite as rewatchable as maybe some of the other movies of this era, just because a lot of the runtime of this movie is characters figuring out the plot. And so once you know the plot, it's like, all right, you don't need to like revisit this one every year, but it obviously, yeah, very strong movie.
Yeah, I think it's a very fun, it feels very John McTiernan-y. I don't know, it feels like it's a little bit like Die Hard is most of the time him figuring out stuff, and like once you know it, it's not as exciting, but
Die Hard's filled with set pieces.
Yeah, and, set pieces, and... yeah. Well, like I like this movie. I find it pretty rewatchable. I agree. I wouldn't rewatch it every single year as a thing, but it's so well made. It kind of always holds a little bit of value.
I like it a lot. The only thing that I found myself, and I get that this is just a me thing. This is not a. This is like a. This is a like a quote unquote like fucking woke thing, but I'm happy to be that person. Is that the plot does rely a lot on sort of American exceptionalism, where it's like how did the U.S. find out about this? How is it that the U.S. is saving these Russian soldiers? And it's like, oh, because Courtney B. Vance is so good at listening to music. That he was able to just find it out, and Jack Ryan, the military man, is just also so much of like sort of a guy that cares about the world, that he studies these different captains and whatnot. And there's a smidgeon of that sort of,
kind of James Bondian, yeah.
Yeah, a thing that sneaks into most sort of militaristic films that are based around the U.S., which is just that idea that we are somehow intrinsically better or different because of where we come from and who we are. And it is that thing that is in no way a problem with this movie, and nothing that anyone before 5 years ago probably would have thought of or talked about. But it is just that thing that on rewatch, from putting it in a lens of right now, is that only part where you're like, all right, there's a lot of deus ex machina because of characters that are just so darn American that they're good at this thing, right? That this man is not only part of the military, but that he loves composers and music and yada, yada, yada. And
so we're sophisticated, too.
Well, America's never pulled a Crazy Ivan, so...
That's valid.
Speak about exceptionalism in your own time,
either to port or to starboard.
Yeah. Yeah, either to port, yeah. So, have you heard of a Crazy Ivan? Also, what's a sane Ivan? Is that just going straight? Just a total
it's just straight.
Sane
it's
Ivan?
Just directly... It's just going straight. Ivan famously was... Yeah, he was a very good captain in One Direction.
Yeah. But when he was crazy, you're going all over the place.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is, I mean, speaking of kind of the Die Hard feel, this is still shot by Jan de Bont. Is that how you say his name?
Jan
that's
de Bont,
a Bond villain.
Cinematographer.
That's a Bond villain right there.
Hey, Jan de Bont. He's a very, very good. He directed Speed, I think, and Twister.
Yep, and then. I think he might have made Speed 2.
Yes.
And then he attacked the UN. Yeah, we all remember.
He also made The Haunting, starring Liam Neeson. So.
I believe those are his four credits.
God, we need to get more Liam Neeson movies into this somehow.
But yeah, it has that kind of look of Die Hard, and just really creative ways of keeping the movie visually interesting and maintaining tension in, you know, the really tight space of a submarine, if like whipping the camera back and forth between characters and everything. This movie also has that kind of Goldfinger thing of like, you know, the Fort Knox set at the end, if like they're in that red part of the submarine at the end where he's chasing the cook, of like, no idea if that's what that part of a submarine really looks like, probably not, but like it just looks so awesome. Why would you want it to be anything else in this movie?
Yeah, lighting really helps that out, right? You see this every time that you have movies set on ships or in stark sort of military or government locations. The answer, and it's the right answer. The answer is always like, great, have the same location in red light.
Yeah.
Because immediately everything is going to be scarier. Everything seems more important. And it's like totally the correct decision. because he is just definitely crawling on top of some scaffolding for 15 feet and then shooting a guy, but it looks way better when the ship is going like, wow, wow, and like red lights are flashing.
Oh, yeah. Well, now what they do for everything is just like strobe effect for movies now. It's like lightning or like the... Just it's flashing on and off what you can see, which I'm pretty tired of in action and horror movies today. We got I forgot one Jan de Bont movie. We named four of his movies. Do you want to? Can you guess the crappy sequel that he directed about 20 years ago?
Porky's 2.
Yeah, Porky's 2 from 2003.
Yeah, I got no clue.
Tomb Raider, Cradle of Life. That is his last directing credit.
Well, that's sort of the Porky's 2 of sequels for action movies, yeah.
Yeah, that's how everyone thinks of it.
I saw that movie in theaters, and I'm not sure I've seen it since.
Gerard Butler's in that, I think.
He's very much in that. That was very much when all of us allowed Gerard Butler to happen.
Yeah,
we are all to blame. We really enabled him for that. He there's exactly three or four movies that I want Gerard Butler to be in all of history. And it is 300. It is Law Abiding Citizen, which I maintain is actually, I think, a really fun movie. There's four. There are technically four because one of them is a series. The How to Train Your Dragon series, because he's actually a really actually a really good voice actor in that. And then there's that the love movie that he kind of got famous for.
The Love Guru?
P.S. I Love You?
I think P.S. I Love You?
No, that would have been well after 300.
That's the one
with Hilary Swank.
It came out the year after 300.
P.S. I Love You?
Came out in 2007, and 300 came out in 2006.
Well, you're forgetting about Attila the Hun, the miniseries on USA, because that was very fun.
I can't say that I watched that.
For a couple of history buffs like myself and my brother Paul, we were really
He is in Reign of Fire. Do y'all remember Reign of Fire?
I do. Yeah, with Matthew McConaughey with the dragons. Oh.
I love that movie. That movie is so bad, I would kill for that movie. I want them to... Why don't we make dumb shit like that anymore? Or more importantly, why don't we give dumb shit like that $100 million anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, those King Kong and Godzilla movies cost a lot of money.
Yeah, but you know what you're going to get. This one, you had no idea what you're going to get. It's The Walking Dead with dragons fucking 10 years before The Walking Dead ever came out.
Have either of you seen Den of Thieves? Because Den of Thieves is fun.
No, I'm not an idiot, so I didn't watch that.
Oh my, yeah, that was the level of vitriol. Oh my god, that was just. Oh my god. No, I have not seen Den of Thieves. But I don't have any emotional attachment to people that have or haven't seen it. Well, I'm a fan of O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Check it out, everyone except you, I guess.
Well, it just looks like a dumb movie.
as far as movies that rip off Heat go, it's a good time.
Okay.
Which is a lot of movies.
Well, have you seen Triple Nine?
Yeah.
I have not seen that either, but I will not see either one.
I've seen Triple Nine. I've seen Takers. I've seen all the Heat knockoffs.
Wow.
I hate to bring it to all of them.
Give me
I've
Robin
also seen...
Banks again.
No, I was going to say, I had to break to all of them. I've seen Heat, and I don't love Heat.
I don't either.
They're ripping off a boring movie and, unsurprisingly, making boring movies.
Wow, that's a hot take. Okay.
Heat is not very good. If they had made Heat 10 years before and everyone in it cared as much like as they did when they were 10 years younger, I think Heat's a good movie. It's just boring. It's a bunch of people that are done. It's a bunch of people that are aware that they're in a movie that they wished that they had made before.
Yeah, I like Michael Mann. I think he can be a really, really good director. He just, like, doesn't do it for me. I don't know if I dislike it as much as That's never a movie I'm going to sit around and be like, yeah, boring. I got to watch
it again.
Yeah, like, I got to watch Heat again right now. Yeah.
I just, again, I'm just being dead serious. Imagine 85 Al Pacino, 85 Robert De Niro, 85 Val Kilmer, 85 John Voight making this same movie.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's a way better movie. It's a bunch of people that care more, but it's just that we spent a decade saying, why haven't Al Pacino and Robert De Niro been in a movie together before?
Yeah, look, if you're asking me to watch that or Righteous Kill with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, I'm choosing Righteous Kill.
Are you serious?
Jesus
Christ.
But I would also just rather watch individual, discrete Robert De Niro, Al Pacino movies. I would rather watch two movies starring them separately than watch Heat again. And it would come to the same runtime, because Heat is also so long.
It is really, really long. It overstays its welcome in a big way.
It's 2:50. It's 2:50. Ugh. Liev Schreiber's great, though.
Well, wait, Liev Schreiber?
Oh, no, sorry, Tom Sizemore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, always.
For me, the action is the juice. I say that all the time. Max thinks I'm joking, but I have said that to you a bunch of times recently.
That is not the first time he said that to me.
I believe you.
Okay, well, Max, you check out Den of Thieves. And,
I will, gladly.
And also Ambulance, pretty fun kind of Heat.
The Michael Bay?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You know what?
You're really judgmental about trash action movies tonight.
You know what? I didn't see it, and I bet you, if I watched it, I would like most of it. I bet that if I had some popcorn, if I was sitting in a movie theater, I bet I'd have fun. I will happily say that.
You're talking about Ambulance, right? That movie.
Yeah, it's a great double bill with Fan Forstick. do we want, what else do we have to say about Hunt for Red October? Anything that we talked about Heat for 10 minutes?
Well, I'm going to say this.
The helicopter scene's great. Like him dropping in the water. Yeah.
And also too.
Great wet Baldwin again.
Can we give a big shout out? You know who's really the emotional heart of this movie? Who gives his all? And his death scene is so, so sad. Give it up for Sam Neill.
Hell yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a freaking unbelievable job in this movie.
And it's the whole movie.
Pre-Jurassic Park Sam Neill. He's been in some stuff, but not a really huge star in America. He does such a good job in this movie.
It fully hits you. Because he is so supportive the whole time. It is such a trope, the sort of the sycophantic, but the ever believing underling who sticks with you through thick and thin but ends up dying, and he is such a perfect portrayal of it. And when he says I wish I could have seen Montana, man, does it break your heart.
Yeah,
man, does it actually really get you.
Yeah, he's kind of Who's the actor I'm thinking of? He's kind of the David Morse from The Rock of this movie.
Exactly.
Is this the best Connery wig?
I'm gonna say it's
an A+. It's an A+ wig. He looks so good with that hair. Well, he looks so good with that hair.
Are we comparing this to Bond era Connery wigs?
Or? I think it's better. I think you can. It's easier to look at him in most of the Bond movies and be like, yeah, I can kind of see where that looks a little funky. He just looks really cool in this and The Rock.
It fits him. I think his hair looks so good in this movie.
All right. Should we get to our non-Bond favorite Connery movies?
Oof, I'm not gonna. I already texted y'all about it. This is gonna be painful for me. While looking at lists of Sean Connery movies, I realized I have not. I wasn't alive and British in the 70s, so a lot of his best movies I haven't seen, and so I don't feel comfortable adding them to a list.
you didn't go and see The Man Who Would Be King when it came out.
Yeah, exactly.
In British cinemas.
There's so many of his movies that I was like, didn't know this happened. Didn't know that he was in a movie with Michael Caine. So many of these movies that I was like, I have no fucking clue. You could have said this as a fake thing, and I would have said, I don't know.
That's a John Huston movie too.
What?
Yeah, John Huston directs that. I've seen that.
I should see that movie.
That's one of the few, like, I've maybe seen six Sean Connery, not including Zardoz. it's kind of slim pickings.
Wait. The average listener of this will not have heard of Zardoz. Pause this podcast. Go to your nearest computer.
Go watch Zardoz.
Go to YouTube.
Watch Zardoz. It's an hour 50, maybe.
It's not that long, but...
Understand that you are now reborn, that you now have a childlike look on life because you've now seen perhaps the most absurd piece of art that exists. And also understand that Sean Connery actively as a human being said, I am done playing Mr. Bond. I have chosen Zardoz. Yep.
I'm going to go a little toward your perspective on Heat and say, I think it's, you need to watch Zardoz with alcohol and a group of friends. You really, if you watch it alone, you will be confused and bored.
Yeah. You'll have a brain aneurysm. You'll die. Yeah.
No, three of us watched Zardoz together.
Yeah.
And
which is the only reason it was a pleasurable experience.
Yeah. I'd also say, even amongst friends, really good friends like us, I have never felt a movie's length more than that movie. It felt like 4 hours. I don't think it's that long, but it felt so long.
It's not like a dumb, like, fun movie like Highlander or like Friday the 13th or something.
It's the level of bad that, like, MST3K would cover it.
No, you have to bring the party to Zardoz. Yeah. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an MST3K movie, and it's kind of amazing that they haven't done that. I mean, I know they mostly go like older, but
I'm literally Googling it because there's no way that they didn't like that Riff Trax or someone did that. You know, their thing that they did after. Yeah, Riff Trax did it.
Yeah. Okay. They had
because come on, the gun is good.
Yeah, the gun is good.
Bad.
The gun is good. The penis is evil. You have to come on, people. The gun is good. The penis is evil. It is akin to Manos, the Hands of Fate, a film that I have watched both as an MST3K and I'm an insane person. So I watched about 40 minutes of it raw, as I'll call it, unprotected. And that is a film that it's physically painful. It hurts. It hurts to watch because it is that bad. Zardoz is on the same level as that. And Sean Connery is in it, so it's not going to appear on any of our lists, but it's very important to me that everyone learns about it.
So I counted 14 movies off his IMDb that are not James Bond films that Sean Connery has at least appeared in that I've seen. Definitely a good third of them are bad, so yeah, also not the hardest thing to make this list.
And normally I take out the movie we're talking about, so it can't be on the list, and that makes this even harder.
Impossible. I kept it on.
That's fine.
I almost have to.
I kept it off my list for that reason, but it definitely deserves a place on my list, and also my list is going to be mostly movies we've talked about as well. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously, there's another movie we've done that would be number one or two. I guess I'll include that in there, but he has a pretty limited selection, so we're going for slim pickings here.
Well, and there's also just movies that I haven't. Movies where he's supporting seen. Roles and movies that I haven't seen that's like, oh, I should check that out.
Supposed to be good in.
So I'll start. This is our favorite Connery movies that are not James Bond. And My number five is Robin and Marian. It's directed by Richard Lester. Mid-70s, Connery is an older Robin Hood. Audrey Hepburn is Maid Marian. It's one of those things like Robert Shaw and Jaws or something where it's like, Connery's only in his mid-40s here, but he's playing it like he's 65 or something, and that's sort of how the movie's treating it. And actually, Robert Shaw is, I think, the Sheriff of Nottingham in the movie. It's good. It's not as kind of silly as you'd expect it to be from Richard Lester. It's pretty heartfelt. It is fun. Definitely kind of a cult classic now that if you're a Connery fan or a Robin Hood fan, check it out. You want to go next?
Yeah. For number five, I'll say Outland.
I've never seen that. I want to.
It's actually kind of a fun movie. It's probably one of his few movies I've seen.
Yeah.
It's kind of called High Noon in Space. It's a little bit different. Kind of fun. Has some pretty decent visuals and VFX for the time it's made. It's worth seeing.
It's High Noon, but it's on like Jupiter or something.
Yeah, on the second moon of Jupiter.
Nice.
And I mean, I don't remember much about it. I think I watched it in a film class.
Yeah.
Probably 10 years ago or something. But
did you also watch High Noon in the film class?
No, I'd already, like, I think I'd already seen that.
They're like, we're going for Outland.
Yeah. The professor pointed out that this movie is like, oh, this is like High Noon, but, you know, watch that and see how people try to, like, vary ideas. And
yeah.
Remember watching it. Kind of interesting. Better than Zardoz. That's pretty much my barometer here.
That's the bench.
I will definitely watch it, possibly on a plane at some point.
That is the bench. Is it better than Zardoz? My number five, and I'll happily get shit for it. I grew up on this movie. I watched it a whole bunch as a kid. I put Dragonheart.
Going to guess Finding Forrester. I've never seen Dragonheart.
I love Dragonheart. It's not great. A lot of the animation is not great. But it's Sean Connery voices like a dragon, and Sean Connery has a cool voice for a dragon. It's just like a good action movie. Dennis Quaid is in it. He plays like a knight. It's fine. David Thewlis, who is the Professor Lupin in the Harry Potter series. Great British actor. He's also the bad guy in the first Wonder Woman. He plays like a bad king in it. So it's like the cast is actually really decent. And it's just like a fun movie. Like an 8-year-old Max renting that and watching that thought that it was fantastic. So I will happily put it number five.
Nice. I do want to watch that at some point. My number four is The Great Train Robbery. I think, who was this directed by? It was someone, right? Did a human do it?
Some guy.
But I watched it for the first time recently with my family. It's a fun kind of old school heist movie. Came out.
I haven't seen either because it's a remake. Yeah.
Oh, it's directed by Michael Crichton. It says screenplay by Michael Crichton based on his novel. So I'm not. I don't think it's a remake.
Is it not based on The Great Train Robbery, like the 1903?
Oh, maybe sort of inspired, but it takes place in England, I think. It's pretty, yeah, I mean, it's pretty different than that. Maybe it's just taking the title. But yeah, it's Connery, Sutherland, kind of Ocean's 11-y train heist. Some cool stunt work. There's a lot of shots of like Connery climbing on like the outside of this moving train that I don't really know how they did, or if they just, you know, he had a rope or something, but it looks really good. So that's it's a pretty good time. If you've never seen it, I'd recommend it.
Cool.
My number four is Highlander.
Sweet.
It's not a good movie. It stinks. But I kind of like him in it. It's a fun premise. And it's kind of a cultural phenomenon in a little its own way. So
it's the Highlander. Yeah. There could only be one.
There can only be one.
You will hear no argument from me.
Yeah. The Quickening.
I put at number four Red October, not because it is the fourth best movie, but I think that his performance in this movie that we just watched is good, but I think he has better performances in other movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sort of where I put it. From this one, since none of these movies are fucking astounding, they're all just levels of good to very good. This one specifically, I kind of went by just like, which one do I most want to watch? Which one do I think is best? And which one do I think he is most sort of well utilized? And while I like him in Red October and I think he does a good job, I do think that you could have made this movie and put a lot of people in his role, and it would have been just as good.
Yeah. My number three, talked about it on here before. I'm going Untouchables, sort of the first part of his comeback after kind of an uneven, you know, 70s and 80s, or at least, you know, there's some pretty good movies in that period, but hadn't had a lot of hits, and then Untouchables does very well. He wins an Oscar for it. It's an enjoyable movie. It's got a couple really standout Brian De Palma set pieces, and definitely one of Connery's better performances. Obviously, like this movie, clearly not an Irish cop in Chicago. He's a very Scottish man in Chicago. It's hilarious. Like, you'd think David Mamet would have just been like, hey, does he have to be Irish? Like, at some point. But yeah, fun movie. Definitely watch it if you haven't seen it.
My number three is also Untouchables. Sean Connery plays an Irish cop.
And every character in the movie at some point refers to him as, hey, you Irish pig.
Yeah, and he is so Irish.
Yes, I'm very Irish.
He's very good in it, and I think that my main criticism of that movie are that I don't think Brian De Palma is a great director, and I don't really love Kevin Costner in that role, but it's still a very, very good movie. And
Andy Garcia kicks ass.
Yeah,
that movie
he kicks
too.
Ass.
I only ever want to see Kevin Costner as the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, doing his best to rebuild the team on draft day.
He's gonna do what's best for the team.
Draft day.
Film Draft Day, a movie which I don't know if I've said it on the podcast. I've said it to the two of you. I watched.
You've said it on the podcast.
Well, yeah.
I love Draft Day, and guess what? I am now even more sort of hoisted up because this is very sad. I'm not saying this in a jokey way. It is now one of the few Chadwick Boseman performances we all get to enjoy.
Oh yeah,
And he's fucking great in it, by the way. So like go back and rewatch it. Because hot damn. Jennifer Garner's also great in it. I love Draft Day. My number three is The Rock. I won't talk about it because we already did it. It's The Rock. I love The Rock. It's not like he's fucking very like he's fine. He's crazy
he's
in it.
It.
He's crazy in it. But like, guess what? I don't think you can make The Rock and not have him.
Yeah.
In it.
No,
he's so good in that.
He's coasting off movie star charisma at that point. He's that's my number two. So fuck yeah, The Rock.
That is also my number two. So.
Let's go, baby.
There we go. Rock's great. Let's roll, baby.
There's a reason why it was on the list. There's a reason why when we watched it, we all said it was great. Like, The Rock's great. He's really good in it. That's awesome. Awesome.
I have a feeling we all have the same number one.
Well, I haven't said my number two, and I will real fast. It's The Untouchables. I really want to rewatch it. I don't think I've watched it since I was maybe a teenager, and I was just reading about it because, again, I was putting this list together, and I was like, "Holy crap! I don't think I remember this movie almost at all." So I'm definitely gonna go rewatch it.
Nice. Yeah, they just did a great restoration of it recently. It looks really good. My number ones, couple honorable mentions, Time Bandits, really fun Terry Gilliam movie that he's plays, I think, King Agamemnon in it, obviously. You know, he's only in that movie a scene or two, but worth watching. And then Sidney Lumet's Murder on the Orient Express, which is, yeah, good movie. He's got a supporting role in it, but yeah, one of the better.
Yeah, can you just say the number when you say the number one? Just say it for all of us.
Yeah, one of the better Agatha Christie adaptations. And then, of course, I got to shout out Highlander, because if you've never seen Highlander and are interested in just the 80s in general, I think I think
if
it's
heard
one of those
of the 80s.
Yeah, if you've heard of the 80s, I think there's some things like Rocky IV or like Rambo that like you just gotta check out.
There
like,
are very few movies that are fun and decent where you can say Sean Connery's the best part of this movie. That's Highlander. Like, he's kind of the best part of it, but it's also kind of fun.
Go home and watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and then The Highlander, and you also will have been sort of a teenager in the 80s.
So our number one non-Bond Sean Connery movie, which we will be talking about in great detail very soon, is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Obviously.
We all got it.
Obviously.
We all passed the test.
His biggest hit, I think, ever.
My favorite Indiana Jones movie.
It's
I didn't expect that to be met with silence. I didn't need I didn't need agreement, but I didn't expect stunned silence.
No, we all know that about you. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
I'm not gonna agree.
I didn't say best, I said favorite.
No, we're happy for you and your choices.
Yeah. But
she
it's
talks
definitely...
in her sleep. She talks in her sleep. I don't know what to tell you.
It's definitely his best movie outside of the Bond franchise.
It
is also a very great movie, so you're not wrong in loving it.
No, his absent-minded professor performance is so different than what he does in so many other things. It's one of the first movies where he clearly accepts his age,
which I
bet he only was able to do because of he's surrounded by people that he's forced to respect, you know?
But that was part of that was kind of his choice as well, because the first scripts had Indiana Jones's dad being kind of a badass too, and apparently Connery was like, I think he should be kind of this bumbling, you know, professor who doesn't know how to punch someone.
He's just so fucking good in it, man. Most of my favorite quotes from that movie, and I quote that movie on a weekly basis, if not monthly, most of my favorite ones are from him, man. I quoted it earlier in this recording without meaning to. I said that you should try reading books instead of burning them.
I got that.
He's just so good.
Then you called us goose-stepping morons, and I thought that was mean.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit rude, but...
All I wanted to let it be known is that my armies are the rocks and the trees and the birds in the sky. I just thought that it was important that we're all aware of that, and that they got us, son. But yeah, he, in what should have been the final Indiana Jones movie... He helps the series sort of like feel complete and feel together, and this character that you now adore completely, you get to see why they were the person that they are, and Sean Connery is almost the only person that you could have done that as, because Harrison Ford is such a massive action star, such a massive name, such a massive movie star at that point. How is his father a regular guy? His father has to be someone like James fucking Bond.
Yep.
Yeah, he brings an emotion to that movie that's not really present in the other movies of the series. So that's, which is kind of what that movie's about, and kind of it would I think just be seen as kind of a retreat of Raiders of the Lost Ark if not for his character.
He's so good. I have a poster on my wall of I have like a fan made sort of art, an artist made Indiana Jones Last Crusade poster on my wall, and it is a fan-made one that implies that Harrison Ford is sort of co-starring in a film dual billed by Sean Connery and Denham,
oh, yeah.
Elliot, because they are that important to the movie and could not have been played by anyone else.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, he's a guy that played James Bond, who was a model that played James Bond, and then went on to be in other movies. But that's probably the only one of the few instances where he's really an actor, mm-hmm. and really does a good job in a role. And got to be his number one. Yeah, you know, maybe that and Untouchables, basically, where he's really given it his all. In every other movie, he's kind of just Sean Connery, but.
Yeah. Just kind of movie starring around, but you care when he gets shot. You, it's not, it doesn't feel representative. It feels like you know you actually care when he sits in the chair and falls down the stairs. Like man, he's just so good. That movie is so fucking good. I cannot wait. Cannot wait to talk about it.
So I'm gonna take one last look, but I think I forgot to bring that bag of movies, in which case, I don't know, you could just pick a movie, we could get Cody Banks out of the way, or we could do True Lies while it's actually streaming somewhere.
Okay, we're doing True Lies then.
Sure.
Is it streaming on Netflix or Disney Plus?
I think it's on Hulu. It wouldn't be a bad idea to do True Lies next, because that movie will disappear from streaming and not even like be able to rent for long periods of time. Because, I don't know, I think some of the more sexist stuff, like Cameron and no one in particular is like pushing to like get that movie. Like, you can't even get that movie on Blu-ray. Let me make sure it's streaming still.
It's on Hulu, which I'll
Max if, will be stealing
not,
it still.
If not, I'll find y'all a link. Wink, wink.
Do you really want to do a deep dive podcast on some movie that's so bad? Is it really that bad?
True Lies?
Have you never seen True Lies?
I have before. Like,
no.
Am I misremembering from 12-year-old me? Like,
no.
is it that bad that it can't even be like?
No,
streamed?
It's just like not the most popular. Like,
it's when your filmography is, you know, also Aliens and
Terminator.
It's not
like an abhorrent.
No, and also
we're not going to get canceled for talking about True Lies.
Okay.
Not only that, but also it is, we just are now living in this dark dystopian version of the future where we solved the problem of movies disappearing by putting them into physical print, and then we got rid of physical print, and now we're stuck in the same fucking dystopian hellscape where art is just not going to be able to be accessed anymore. Not that True Lies is a paragon of film, but the point is that you know who will always be able to show you True Lies? Me. So don't you worry.
Okay, then I'm pulling True Lies out of this hypothetical bag.
James Cameron classic.
Okay. That kind of thing is my bag, baby.
It actually makes sense, too, because Avatar The Way of Water is coming out soon. Cameron movie.
Yeah, so that's... We can choose between top five Arnold or just...
Top five Avatar movies?
We could just rank the
top five Jimmy
C. We can talk, because there's going to be five Avatar movies, so we can
predeterminate.
Like, I think number three is going to be my number five.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, because James Cameron has only directed like eight movies, so we could just rank the Cameron movies. Also, I assume you've both seen Piranha 2: The Spawning Ground.
Shut up.
I watch it every week of my life.
We'll double feature it
with Ambulance.
Decide about that. That sounds like a good night to me. Any parting thoughts on Sean Connery, True Lies, Hunt for Red October?
Make more submarine movies.
I guess we'll watch True Lies.
Yeah.
Be more excited. It's a good time.
there's a Harrier jet in it. You get to see one of the coolest planes ever made. It's a jet that...
Look, 12-year-old me is thrilled, okay? Watching it on AMC.
It's a jet that
Charlton Heston's in it.
Tom Arnold. You can't get excited about Tom Arnold.
Yeah, he did play Forrest Gump in the animated Forrest Gump. So
Bill Paxton's in it.
Is that a true story?
You love Bill Paxton.
I love Bill Paxton. Yeah, we all know that. Yeah. So
come on. Jamie Lee Curtis does a striptease. Like, that's always great. Does. Yeah, Young Max.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, all her movies like Freaky Friday, where she does a striptease.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks to everyone for listening. Check out our social media, if you will. Like and subscribe and rate and review. And we'll see you very soon for a discussion on James Cameron's True Lies.
Go watch Zardoz.
Also, check out Zardoz.